Is the new Toyota Land Cruiser a dud? Well, that's what we're talking about on this episode of the TFL Car Chat TFL Off-Road 4x Chat. We got to work on the name of our new off-road podcast a little, Dad.
So what's in the thumbnail? Stud or dud?
Stud or dud. Yeah, that's great. You're thinking like a YouTuber now, because this is one of the more controversial cars of the past couple years. They made it smaller, they made it more affordable, and in today's podcast, we're gonna do a full walk around, then we're gonna get it out into the dirt, and then later we're gonna head into the studio and talk about some other topics.
Well, it's also a video, Tommy, so if you're listening to this, enjoy, and if you're watching it, you'll get to see us take the new Land Cruiser into Andre's pit. Now let's talk about this. Toyota did something smart, Tommy, I think at least, and that is they took a very expensive vehicle and made it less expensive, and that's very unusual.
Well, that's what half of the community thinks. The other half of the community thinks that they took an iconic nameplate and cheapened it. So what they did with this new Land Cruiser is, in the US, they took the Land Cruiser name and they applied it to what in Australia would be called a Prado. So historically, there's been two lineages of Land Cruiser. There's a full-blown Land Cruiser, the 100 series, the 200 series, the 300 series, and then there's the Prado edition, which is kind of a lighter-duty Land Cruiser, more affordable, the 150 and the 250. So technically technically overseas, this would be known as a Prado. Here, it's just called the full-size Land Cruiser, but in my mind, that's not such a bad thing.
No, because let's face it, now we've owned the 80 series, we now have a broken 100 series, we've owned the 200 series.
Yeah.
And the problem with the 200 series, which is the last one before this one, is it just got too big and roly-poly and heavy. We actually lifted it, we put an old man Emu, we tried to create our own TRD Pro Land Cruiser, and I did not like wheeling it, Tommy.
Well, the problem with the 200 series is it weighed something like 700 plus pounds more than this new one. So even though dimensionally they're not actually that different, when you get it out on the trail, my biggest issue with the 200s, they feel very ponderous. Keep in mind that weight is the enemy of everything, both on and off-road, and trying to do a rocky climb in a 200 series can get kind of hairy where it shouldn't be, because there's so much weight dragging you down.
Well, and you think that with the fact that this being a hybrid, and it has a pretty large battery actually, that it would be heavier, but because they went from an 8-cylinder to a little 4-cylinder turbo, they did actually make it lighter. Now, if you still want that, let's call it traditional Land Cruiser, you can go and buy it at your local Lexus dealership, Tommy.
Yeah, so the LX, as it has always been, is a 300 series Land Cruiser, right? They had the 80 and the 100 and the 200, and now the 300 series is the LX, and you can even get an over-trail version of the LX with front and rear locking diffs. So that's a great point.
Yeah, it's triple locked, but it's very luxurious. And let's say that the last Heritage Edition 200 was selling for just under $100,000. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to go to the LX, you're going to go at about $120,000 or more, depending on, you know, how you spec it out, because you can get one with those giant, like, airline, private airline seats in the back, you know.
That's right.
The one that is super luxurious.
The executive package one.
And I have wheeled that, but there is this problem where when something becomes too luxurious, too nice, you just don't want to wheel it. It's like wheeling a Range Rover Autobiography. You just feel like it doesn't naturally belong anywhere where there's no pavement.
Well, you gotta wait 30, 40 years when that thing is only $98,000, and then you can go take it on the trail, you know what I'm saying?
So you wanna talk about the horsepower?
Yeah, so what Toyota's done is really pissed off a lot of people. So they went from the legendary 5.7 V8 to a 4-cylinder forced inducted engine with a hybrid system. Now, the big news on this is not the horsepower, it's the torque. 465 pound-feet of torque. That's mated to an 8-speed automatic with a series of electric motors, because it is a hybrid system. But I really think that this was a bold move for Toyota, because they took a community that was devoted, here in the US at least, to be at the 2UZ V8 or the larger displacement V8, and then they went and downsized it greatly and added electrification, which is not what a lot of the purists wanted.
Also, we're using 0W20, that really low
viscosity oil.
Yeah, to give you as much fuel economy as possible. People are really weirded out by that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
but
I think there's some
validity
there.
But you know, time moves on, right? People were also at one point, I'm sure, weirded out by gasoline when they went from steam-powered Stanleys, the old-fashioned way, let's light a fire underneath it, to, you know, modern internal combustion, to now much more modern internal combustion.
I mean, I think ultimately, if you look at the sales data, the decisions they have made have been the correct one. Because if you look at 200 series sales from 07-08 through 19, I think 21 maybe was the last year, they were selling like 3,000 to 5,000 units a year in the US. In the first couple of years this has been on sale, I think sales last year were 55,000. I mean, huge, huge sales numbers.
You still can't get them. If you wanted to go and try to buy one, at least here in Colorado, you would have a hard time. You could try to get an allocation for it, but actually having them on the lot is not something that happens. Our friend Alan just bought one, and he wanted a very specific one. He actually wanted this Heritage Blue with the white roof and then the Java interior. And this is a very funny dealer story. So he drove all the way up to Billings, Montana, and apparently they said that they had the spec.
Yeah.
And it turned out that the interior was not that Java brown, but it was black.
Ugh.
I guess they misunderstood him, Tommy. And by that point, they got you in Billings and you're kind of screwed. So we ended up buying it. But this just seems like some typical dealer shenanigans, right? Where, they've got something that is very sought after. And so they take advantage of it. Anyway, do you like the round lights or these square lights better?
So this one being, you know, the Land Cruiser spec has got the square lights with the three pods. The 1958 still has the round lights. I wish that Toyota would open up that configurability of allowing the round lights on the top trims. I know that they want to kind of differentiate the two with the visuals, but I really do wish you could get this color, this spec, with the round lights. Because the problem with the 1958 is they lock you out of the good colors. Like, if I want Heritage Blue, I can't get it on the base spec.
I would say they lock you out of the good color, because all of them...
What about the tan? You don't like the hearing aid beige?
No, don't like the mustard yellow either. I do kind of like, there's a meteor gray, which is okay, but the colors are so like drab and boring that really this blue one is the only one that is at all poppy, especially for doing videos. Now this one is stickers at $70,000. So it's not actually as expensive as you can get them. So the 1958 starts at, I think, like 57 now, and the common ones in the dealerships are at least 75. So at $70,000, this is expensive, but you can get a more expensive. And one of the reasons it's not completely gutted, I mean, not completely
specced up,
yeah, is it doesn't have the thing that I wish it kind of had. It doesn't have the disconnectable sway bar.
But I think I was just reading,
yeah,
it's standard for 26.
The disconnectable sway bar?
Yeah, oh. I think I just heard that. And I think the price now is essentially 60K for base.
Yeah.
I got to double check
that. Up to like 75 plus?
Yeah, you know, it's an expensive vehicle, but it's not 85 like the old one. But, I mean, look, it's an interesting discussion, because when you start specking them up like this one, you bring in the sister vehicle to this, which is the Lexus GX. Because for 70 and change, you are in the Lexus territory.
Yeah, but you can't get a GX either. So you can't get a Land Cruiser and you can't get a GX.
Because of availability?
Exactly.
If you could, though.
And this would compete with the Overtrail in the GX, right?
Yeah.
And that Overtrail is probably more like 80.
Depends on how you spec them. I think you can get a base Overtrail, and then there's the Overtrail Plus, which is like the luxe one. But would you, if you had the two side by side, Land Cruiser maybe 5 to 10K less expensive, would you get the Toyota or the Lexus?
I would definitely get the Toyota, because I've always been a fan of the Land Cruiser name. I think it has a very strong heritage. I also, when we went on the GX program, I found that they all ride pretty poorly, actually.
Except the Overtrail,
yeah. But out of all of them, that's the one that actually rides the best. And that one has also become, let's face it, the kind of the mall crawler. This, I think, at least here in Colorado, gets built out. People still, you know, lift them. They put winches on them. They make them actually Land Cruiser-y traditionally, whereas I've never seen a built-out GX. It's always the one that, like, you know, expensive schools have running around when kids are getting picked up.
But you can do the same stuff to a GX.
Yeah, but people don't do it.
But you could. Nothing's stopping you. There's no law.
Well, sure. What's stopping you is you're already 80 into it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the thing that a lot of folks like about the GX is instead of having the four-cylinder turbo hybrid, you get the 3.4 twin-turbo V6. Which honestly is pro and con, especially because many of those engines have been recalled famously in Tundras and that kind of thing. So, you know, there may be some pro and con of that.
Well, the downside of this engine is there's two downsides. The two biggest, I think, Achilles heels are it only gets relatively crappy fuel economy. So we're getting about 22 mpg with the hybrid system, which isn't grand.
Yeah, but 200 series, which is essentially the same size, would do like 13.
We had a Maverick that got 42. Yeah. It's a truck.
But a Maverick is made out of tinfoil and little bits of bubblegum.
This
is a Land Cruiser.
I'm just saying, 21 is okay. It's one of those Toyota hybrid systems that's designed more for power than it is for fuel economy.
I mean, but once
it
again...
It ain't no Prius, Tommy.
When you consider the weight difference between this and the 200, I mean, that thing was getting like 13, 14, so 21.
Sure, but that was pretty horrible.
The biggest issue is not the fuel economy for me.
It's the fuel tank size.
The tank is tiny, and it doesn't have a lot of range, so that's a bummer.
And then the other thing we should talk about is you went upmarket, but how about going downmarket? As you know, we also had the Forerunner TRD Pro, which was also very expensive. That was, I think, 50...
We had a TRD Off-Road.
TRD, but it was like 50...
58.
57, I think, we paid for it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Tommy, this feels a lot more spacious. It feels a lot more airy. It feels a lot more roomy. It actually has a much better ride. The issue I had with the... TRD Off-Road 4Runner is the ride was pretty stiff. And then inside the materials here, Cole, you want to show them this beautiful Java interior? I think it's called Java. This chocolate colored interior is absolutely stunning with this heritage blue and then the white roof. I just love the color combination. I'd throw some like white wheels on this thing and you'd have the perfect off-roader.
I mean, I think for me, the reason I personally like Land Cruiser more than 4Runner is actually the driving position and visibility. So I always feel that in the new 4Runners, they're kind of like driving in a cave. So it's got a really high belt line and relatively small windows. But in the Land Cruiser, you get, I hate to bring in my brand, but the Land Rover driving experience where you sit super tall in the vehicle, you get a really low belt line, big straight upright windows. So it feels a lot more airy. And look, being in an open cockpit is always a better experience than, in my opinion, being in a Camaro. And that 4Runner is more Camaro-like than Land Cruiser. This thing has just got a great view of the world.
So I have to say I've completely flip-flopped on this. When we first took this to Moab, which was a year ago now, maybe longer, we had this mustard yellow one, remember? And I think it was out of the press fleet, and I believed it belonged to one of the other kind of magazine journalists, and that person had just taken it through the ringer. And the thing was used and abused, and because of that, I really did not like it. I just felt it didn't hold up well. I felt it didn't ride well. I felt like there were issues with it, which there were. And now that this is our second time in this press loan vehicle, I've really fallen in love with this. And I'm a sucker for colors, so maybe it's the blue, but I just think compared to the 4Runner, and even compared to the GX, I think this is a sweet spot in the Toyota/Lexus lineup. And yeah, if I had all the money in the world, I'd get an LX because it's triple locked. But you know, it's too nice to like beat up right away. Like you said, wait 5 years, 10 years when that thing is depreciated.
When it depreciates $5-6, then you can beat it up.
All right, let me ask you this. All right, like we were looking for, we were doing the series where we're building out hopefully a cheap Land Cruiser.
Yeah, it's going really well.
It's going really well. Yeah, it's very cheap so far. We just broke the differential.
It's getting cheaper. I mean, it was a $12,000 Land Cruiser. Now it's an $8,000 Land Cruiser.
And we could have bought a GX of the same generation.
Yeah.
Right? But we didn't. We bought the Land Cruiser because there's something iconic about the Land Cruiser, and the GX just doesn't have that like fizz to it that the Land Cruiser has. Yes, underneath they're the same vehicle, basically. Not this generation, that previous generation.
They're different.
They're pretty similar.
They're super different.
Really?
So different. I mean, when you consider the Prado of that era,
well, apparently,
it's a very different platform.
Apparently not, because the GX front diff also fits the Land Cruiser.
So that 8-inch ring and pinion was undersized on the 100 series for sure, and that's ultimately what we destroyed.
Right, maybe but I'm saying you can take the GX.
Yeah, there's aspects that are similar, but the platform is so different. I mean,
you make it sound like it's like the difference between a Range Rover and a Land Rover and a Land Cruiser. It's not.
It's the difference between a Discovery and a Disco Sport is the difference. I mean, they're really different, but let's not fight about that.
Okay.
Let's get in the thing. Let's go take it into the pit and see what it's like off-road.
All right. Yeah, let's go.
All right. I mean, what you're getting there kind of fundamentally is we're rolling here, we're good to go.
Okay.
Is that debate of Land Cruiser versus Land Cruiser Prado. And you know, the argument for Land Cruiser is that this is a vehicle, even though Toyota won't say this, I've talked to insiders, that's designed and manufactured to last a 250,000 mile service cycle.
Well, the old one was.
Where the Prado was a normal 150,000 miles, right? So that's what made a Land Cruiser special, is that it was a much heavier duty vehicle than anything else in the lineup, and really anything else in the market.
I just feel like, in a way, Toyota, since the 100 series, has, I wouldn't say cut corners, but It hasn't been as stout, even though our 100 series did break the first time we took it.
200 series was kind of what most people would say is a high watermark for reliability.
Our mechanic thinks otherwise.
But with this new product, one of the reasons I don't think that's such a big issue is, like, listen, if you are listening right now or watching right now in Kenya.
They just call it a Prado. It's a Land Cruiser. I mean,
this is a Prado, though.
No, Toyota gets to call it whatever they want. And it says Land Cruiser on it, so let's call it what it is. I mean, you can, I get what you're saying. In other countries, it's a Prado, but that in here, it's a Land Cruiser.
No, but what I'm saying is, if I was in Eastern Sahara and I needed a vehicle that would work through the desert 250 times a year under the harshest conditions, I think maybe there is an advantage to getting the full-size Land Cruiser. But listen, I'm a nerd, right? I go out to Moab a few times a year. I like doing
Before you go up this, do we want to tell them what...
In a sec. Let me finish my thought first. I go up, you know, a few times a year. I'm typically driving to Starbucks. I'm going to the office. I don't really need that crazy durability that a Land Cruiser is. And I know that this still has the same Toyota quality that, you know, there's some argument there, but that you come to expect. And it works for what I need it to do.
So do you want to go into low range or do you just want to stay in high range?
Yeah, so we're going up our trenches course here. So I'm going to start in low range first. Okay. And I'm not going to turn any modes on, no lockers. Let's see if it'll crawl up our elephant steps completely unlocked with just traction control. And then we'll try it again with everything locked up.
Yeah, and we have, to be fair, street tires on this.
Yeah, I mean, 20-inch wheels on a Land Cruiser is diabolical. So there we have our first transition there, left front, right rear in the air. It's doing it, even unlocked. Look at that. Pretty good articulation, even though this one doesn't have the disconnect for the stabilizer bar. But with this modern 8-track system, they're so responsive that you can go through pretty much anything fully unlocked, even flexed out. It did great.
And you weren't even in an off-road mode. You were just...
That was just low range.
Just low range.
So now we'll do it again.
Yep.
And Land Cruiser does have standard center locker and standard rear locker, even in the 1958. So we'll lock her up and see how that changes things. We can also engage a terrain mode, and we can also engage crawl control and go for all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, let's try that. It can't hurt.
So what I love about this, though, this is why I think that... I personally would sacrifice maybe some potential durability for drivability. When you're out on a trail like this, this is so much better than any of the quote real Land Cruisers that I've driven in the past. It's just nimble, the turning radius is great, the visibility is great, and it just feels eager to climb. So center locked, we'll do rear locker too. See if we can get that to click on. There's always a problem with Toyota.
Yeah, Toyota always says it takes some rolling for it to actually engage.
We'll drive 300 miles in that direction, then it will click on. Multi-terrain select, let's go into we'll go into rock mode. That's fine.
Okay.
Oh, actually it turns off that when you go to crawl control. That's okay. We'll do crawl control just to demonstrate that. So that's foot off of the throttle and the brake, and the car is doing it all by itself. And look how smooth that is.
Yeah. It's not as herky-jerky as when you were going.
Yep, so that's that rear locker engaged. You know, we've got positive action to both rear tires at the same speed. What a dream. Look at that.
And hopefully, Tommy, we're not going to snap a front diff. I mean,
no,
be
too soon, Dad.
That would be the third tier of diff we would have snapped, and that would be bad.
And then once you're through the obstacle, you can turn off crawl control. And I'm going to unlock everything, and let's talk about the ride quality.
I think it's great. Actually, that's one of my favorite things on this vehicle. Unlike the 4Runner, it's very comfortable. Not a lot of head bob there, as you saw. Not a lot of intrusion from the obstacles coming into the cabin. And the seats are also very comfortable. And they have lumbar support, unfortunately, only on your side. But that's okay, because next time I'm going to be driving it.
That is not okay. I know. That's just so cheap.
That's so cheap. Like, come on. This is $70,000. You could put lumbar support on the passenger and driver side.
What's unusual about this, going back to my visibility argument, is, you know, we're going down our logs course now. We're bouncing all over. But I can clearly see what's at the front of the vehicle because of this high driving position and a relatively low hood. So it's very easy to see what's on the front end there. And then I also got to give them a lot of props for this the throttle management in this thing. You know, you got a hybrid system, 465 pound-feet of torque, but one of my favorite things about this is that instantaneous throttle response right off idle.
So you're going to go up rocks?
We're going to go up a rocks course, Boulder Boulevard, as we call it.
Yep.
We'll try just a little bit of light rock crawling here.
Let's see what the cameras show you. There you go.
Ooh, good views.
Yeah, we got side views. For those of you who are listening, we got front views, and we can change those around. Cameras have become a kind of game changer in the off-road world. The problem is they flatten everything out, so when you're up against a cliff, you're not sure how far you are. When you're about to go over a cliff, you're not sure how close you are to the edge, but they do let you see that cliff.
So these 20-inch wheels are probably not ideal for the situation. We also need to talk about, there we go, the ground clearance. I think they only rated at 8.6 or 8.7 inches.
Which isn't grand.
I don't know where they're measuring from, but I think it's...
More than that?
Well, no, I don't want to say more than that, but I think that's the worst case scenario, is what I'm trying to say. But look,
Subarus have more than that.
Yeah, but Subarus don't have a low range.
No. And, so they have a CVT.
That really limits where you can take them.
Which, you know, combined, doesn't help when it comes to off-roading, yeah.
So now for our approach and departure test. So this is Lava Lane. It's a really steep climb with an immediate dip right beforehand. Be curious to see if we can clear this. You know the towing capacity on this thing?
6,000.
That's another thing. The GX is 9.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'd want to take...
It's like a mid-sized truck.
The problem with that is then you run into wheelbase challenges at 9,000 pounds, and the wheelbase on that these things is pretty short.
You might hit the mud flaps here. I think that's a mud flap hitting right there.
Meanwhile, the rear bumper falls off.
No, it's not the rear bumper. It's just a mud flap. Now, I've got the Vanroni here, and this is Toyota's Toyota. And so we got a base price of $61,470. So we do have... an MSRP of $70,164. So there's basically $8,000 worth of stuff on this one.
Sure.
And that includes, $1,200 for those 20-inch alloys, which you love so much.
Yeah.
The rear bumper guard is $230. Uh-huh. That said, I think that covers the towing hitch. And then the most expensive option is the Land Cruiser Premium Package, Tommy, at $4,600. So that includes things like a cold box.
Yes, it's got a cooler.
Yeah, look at that.
Look at that.
Yeah,
that works pretty well.
You can chill your libation to however you want. And then, moonroof, that's also nice. Qi wireless charging, leather trim memory, driver's seat, lane change assist, cross traffic alert, remote connect trial subscription. I don't know what that is. Subwoofer, 14-speaker JBL premium. Basically all the goodies that you'd want.
Yeah, I might.
Except for the disconnectable sway bar.
Which I think, so shout out to my friend Noah,
yeah,
who's actually shopping for one of these right now. And he is deep into analyzing options and that kind of thing. But yeah, he was saying that it's standard for 26, which is awesome. So.
And it also has the digital mirror.
Yeah.
Which people love or hate. It's it cuts both ways.
So to answer our question that we pitched at the beginning,
yeah,
I actually don't think it's a dud at all. Of all of the Land Cruisers I've driven, which have been 40, 55, 60, 80, 100, 200, 150, this is my favorite, actually. I think that it's the right size, it's the right shape, it's the right interior. And I hate to say it, but it's kind of the right price point compared to where it was in the previous gen.
Yeah, Toyota is just killing it with off-roaders. Right now, people want to have at least that impression of an active lifestyle. And so off-roaders are really big. You can see what Honda's doing with their trail sport. You can see what the Koreans are doing with their XRT version. Mm-hmm. And yet Toyota has, when you think about it, five serious off-roaders.
Yeah.
Tundra, Tacoma, 4Runner, Land Cruiser, GX, actually six, LX. I'm probably missing some.
Did you say Tacoma?
I did.
Did you Tacoma say Tundra. RAV4 Woodland?
I did not. And I didn't say BZ Woodland either, Tommy.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't think I forgot those on purpose.
Well, I think the only thing that this thing really needs, which would be cool, would be a pro version. Because even the most capable tire you can get is just not that capable. But I would love to see them sell one out of the box, rock rails, 18-inch wheels with a KO3, more underbody protection, and maybe even an integrated winch would be awesome. So if Toyota did that, I'd be stoked.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know, Land Rover with the Defender sells all that stuff, and I gotta assume that they make a lot of money on, the ladder,
yes,
the push bar, everything that you can get for it. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, first thing they do, so our friend Alan, who just bought one, just took it to Slee,
yep,
and spend a lot of money upgrading it, and that's money that Toyota's leaving on the table, which they could be, taking back to corporate.
For sure. Well, guys, that's all we have to say about the Land Cruiser for now. But now we're going to cut back to the studio and talk about the big off-road news of the week. All right, everybody, we're back in the studio with Case.
Yeah, it's a little switcheroo.
That's right. And we've got some news of the week we're going to talk about in the off-road space. I think the coolest thing that's happened recently is this launch of this new Jeep.
It's a Willys 392. So this is going to be the most affordable, if you can call it that, 392 Wrangler that they've come out with so far. MSRP is $70,000 plus about $2,000 destination. So it's quite a bit less expensive than especially the previous Rubicon 392s that were hovering around $100,000, especially toward the end of things. When they first came out, they were, what, 80-something?
Yeah, I think they were like 80, 90, something like that. But, I mean, do you remember when people were buying the quote, final edition 392s?
Yeah, and over like 100 for most of those.
$110,000. Oof. But now, if you didn't do that, you can buy a new Wrangler with the 6.4 liter V8. I think it's 470 horsepower for $69,95 plus $2,000 in destination. So you're looking at $72,000. So this is now the cheapest way to get into a 392 Wrangler. The Willys version of it, though, it's missing a couple of things.
Yeah. So the one that they've been showing on the website, last I checked, the configurator wasn't live for these vehicles yet. But the one they're showing on the website is a really cool shade of gold. I like the color that they're showing a lot, but they're showing it with a soft top, so a more basic top option. And it's going to have a rear locker, but not a front locker.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so just like the other Willys in the lineup, it's only rear locked, which honestly is probably fine for most people.
Yeah, I would say so.
Because it still has the 35-inch tall tires. Inside this thing, it's still very well equipped. I think it comes standard with the Napa leather, right? Yeah. So you're going to get the big screen. You're going to get standard heated seats, likely all that stuff, right? But you're not going to get – I don't think it comes with a sway bar disconnect. I don't think it comes with the front locker. But then you're also saving $10,000 compared to the other ones.
If you want some more off-road hardware, you could get into a Moab 392, which is going to get you the front locker, I believe also the sway bar disconnect.
Yeah.
So that's going to get – some more hardware, still less expensive than the Rubicon 392s were back, way back when. But this Willys is pretty interesting. I know a lot of people have the perspective of why do you need a V8 in a Wrangler? You absolutely don't. That's why it's fun. If you're doing 100% off-roading, then the Pentastar is perfectly fine. It will get you up any rock you need to crawl. But most of us are driving majority of the time on the road. And the 392 is obviously horrible on fuel, not that a Pentastar Wrangler is great.
Right.
But a 392 and a Wrangler is so much fun. It's genuinely, to me, some of the most fun I've had in any brand new vehicle because it feels like a mad science project. You get on the throttle, the front end picks up, the back end squats. The suspension's got too much travel and it's too soft for the amount of horsepower and torque that this powertrain has. It's hilarious.
I mean, to your credit, it doesn't really feel like a fully finished product, which is kind of what makes it very
fun. It's awesome.
So we should explain a little bit what Jeep is up to. If you click, Cole, the button that says back to the drop zone on the Jeep website. So what Jeep is doing is they're doing this thing, I think it's called 12 for 12 or something, where they're revealing a new model every month for 12 months, right? So what are some of the other ones we've seen? We've seen like the Moab 392.
The White Cap.
Did you see the, I think it's the 40th anniversary version?
Or
85th anniversary. Yeah, Cole, see if you can find it. Because this I didn't pay much attention to because it just looks like a white Wrangler. But there's actually something really cool with this. There it is, 85th. Did you see the interior on this thing?
The seats, yeah.
The seats are really cool.
It's kind of a plaid seat, which is interesting. The one that they're showing on their website is white exterior. It otherwise looks fairly unremarkable.
Yeah.
The seats are pretty cool. So, again, a lot of these drops that they're doing of new trims aren't substantial differences. A lot of them are kind of appearance packages.
Sure.
But that Willys 392 that they just dropped is pretty interesting. It's still a lot of money for a vehicle, period. But again, a 392 Wrangler is so much fun.
So Jeep has a long history of slapping paint and colors and calling it a special edition. But I do want to take a moment and talk to you about my favorite special edition Wrangler they've ever done.
Ever?
Ever.
Call of Duty Black Ops.
Can you look that one up? That's a good one. So that's right, Cole. Cole, our producer, is giving us a skeptical look. Back in the day, I think it was JK.
Yeah.
They had an edition of the Wrangler, which was, oh boy, Call of Duty Black Ops, which was a black Wrangler that just had some like graphics on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the production one, like bottom left there, Cole, the Cars and Bids one. Yeah, that's the production one. It gives you a badge on the side.
Nice.
But my favorite one, look up the Wrangler Dragon Edition.
Oh, the Dragon.
I don't know who approved this or what they were trying to promote here, but all they did was they painted a dragon on the side of a Wrangler.
Which is enough for me.
Look at that.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
gold
in the grill and on the wheels?
They just gave a Wrangler a tattoo. And then painted the grill slots gold.
Even the steering wheel's got gold on it. That's spectacular. What about the Tomb Raider TJs?
I forgot about those. You want to look that one up? That one is actually cool. The Dragon Edition is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my entire life. But the Tomb Raider TJ.
Yeah. Yeah, it had special wheels and all kind of different.
Did they actually build that?
Yeah.
Did they really? Oh, there you go. Yeah, there's a Cars and Bids one.
Mm-hmm.
That one. I think that must be the production one.
Yeah.
Wow, crazy.
Had all kind of stuff on it. That was pretty cool, actually.
My favorite TJ is the, look up the Golden Eagle TJ.
Oh, yeah.
Remember this? This is so cool. They just painted an eagle on the hood and called it a day, but look at that. Tell me you wouldn't rock one of those.
I absolutely would. 100%. Yeah, Golden Eagle. It's pretty nice.
That thing's rad.
But yeah, as far as the new Jeep, the Willys 392 goes, it would be cool to get the Moab to have that extra hardware if you're actually going to run it on a trail pretty often. But genuinely, and Tommy's kind of the same way, as many new cars as we review, there's only, for each of us, maybe half a dozen brand new cars that either of us would actually want to buy.
Yeah.
And for me, that Moab 392 especially is one of them.
That's really cool. No, I'm stoked about this thing. Very, very cool. So we'll be hopefully either driving it or maybe we can convince Roman to buy one for the company because I think it is such a super cool thing.
Yeah. Now, we've also got a little bit more news with Scout Motors. So,
yeah. So there was a report by a publication called Der Spiegel that Scout is delaying a launch of their new SUV until 2028. And that outlet claimed it was due to technical difficulties and previous financial obligations. Now, Scout still says they are on track for a 2027 production window, but I think they need to get this thing out the door already.
Yeah, for sure. I think sooner the better, especially because we're pretty excited to drive it. So Scout hasn't confirmed any delays.
Right.
It wouldn't necessarily be surprising if there is some delay before the time that these actually get launched. It takes a long time to launch a brand new vehicle, and especially from a new company, even though the Volkswagen involvement should help in a lot of aspects. They're setting up a new company, new manufacturing for a new vehicle. It takes time. Sometimes those timelines get pushed back, but we're very excited to drive these vehicles. You've actually gone and seen the prototypes in person.
Yeah, they're really cool. I mean, I think that they're 100% on the right track with the range extended one.
Yeah.
I think I personally, this is just my speculation, I think that we're not going to see the full electric one because there's so much interest in the range extended one with the gas engine.
You don't even think they're going to produce it?
No, I don't think. I think the complexity of having to produce two different battery packs and market two different vehicles is dumb. I wouldn't be surprised if by the time this thing comes out, be it 27 or 28, that it'll only be the range extended one. And I honestly, like, it's so funny because when I talk to people, the majority of folks I talk to are really excited about the idea of a range extender.
Yeah.
Right?
This has got to be some of the most positive reception that we've ever seen to an electrified vehicle, especially in recent years.
For sure.
Because it has some of those traditional aspects to it, like the solid rear axle, like a body-on-frame construction. And even just a few items like that should make these Scouts some of, if not, when they come out, the best and most rugged off-road vehicles in the electrified space. I would think that this has got the potential. They're definitely a lot more trim and athletic than Hummer EVs, and a slightly more traditional configuration than Rivians. So I think there's really good opportunity for these to be absolutely the best electrified vehicles off-road ever made.
Yeah, I'm
when
there.
They come out.
No, I think that it's very, very interesting that you know that they've committed to the off-road thing. They committed to the solid axle in the rear. It's a really cool plan. They still are kind of cagey about like what the details on the range extender are. Like, we don't actually know what that engine is going to be yet.
Yeah, I think there's been some speculation. Yeah. It's going to be some relatively compact and small displacement engine that it's not going to go under the hood, right?
No, I think it goes in the back.
Yeah.
And it's believed to be probably an EA888, which is the Volkswagen, because is owned by the Volkswagen Group. So that's like their four cylinder they use in everything.
Yeah.
Right? It's like they use it in the Tiguan and the Golf and the Audi A, everything.
Atlas.
If it's got a four cylinders in the EA888, but that would be powerful enough to charge a battery for sure.
Yeah.
It could also be potentially three cylinders. So a lot of interesting things going on. We've also heard rumors that, I don't know if it's rumored or confirmed, but that Audi is going to be using this platform too for a G-Wagon competitor, which would be pretty cool.
That would be.
That would be pretty rad.
We could use some more G-Wagon competitors. We're not in that tax bracket, but we still get to drive some of these things, so I'd be happy about that.
I did have one more piece of news. Go to the Tesla website for off-road podcast.
Wow.
Did you read this? This is one of the more bizarre things I've read.
Controversial thing you're doing here.
I know. We're keeping it in off-road space. Apparently, you can buy a Cybertruck now for $59,000, $59,990, but only for 10 days.
And then the price changes to what?
Unclear. I don't have the full details on it. I need to do some digging. I just saw the headline. But apparently, you can buy a Cybertruck now for $59,999 or whatever, but only for 10 days.
I'd rather walk.
Okay, well, cool. So enough with that. We do want to talk about one other thing, teasing something that you and Cole did. You actually just did drive an off-roader. Think, Case, think.
Like earlier this week?
Earlier this week.
Oh, well, kind of on an off-roader. Tommy's talking about the new Cherokee.
Did they let you drive an off-road?
No, it was raining hard.
Oh, really?
So,
oh, bummer.
Yeah, I think it was all mudslide conditions. Although we turned around in a dirt parking lot.
Oh, there you go. Some hardcore off-road. Did they have an off-road course planned before it got rained out?
Yeah, they had a plan for something. But yeah, while we were there, it wasn't an option.
Listen, These manufacturers, they create these courses, and then when it gets rained out, they shut them down. They should just let us send it through there.
Honestly.
It'd be way more interesting.
I didn't feel that bad that we missed out on whatever off-roading they had planned, because obviously the Cherokee is not planned to be a Wrangler competitor. So any off-road course they would set up would be most likely relatively mild. What I'm excited for is when we get a Cherokee here at the office in Colorado and we can test it out ourselves, both on the slip test and on some actual trails, because I think there's decent potential for the traction control programming to be pretty good on that vehicle. It doesn't have a low-range gear set. It doesn't have tons of clearance, so it's not going to be the most all-out capable thing in the world. But compared to maybe a RAV4 or a CRV or another similarly sized crossover, it's got the potential probably to do pretty well, because you and I tested on a very mild stretch of trail the Wagoneer S, of all things. Yeah. And it had about 2 inches of ground clearance, but the traction control programming was still really good.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a Jeep-like vehicle at all, They still do a great job with the traction control programming, kind of like Land Rover does with some of their more street-focused vehicles.
Yeah.
Because they've got a really good traction control program that exists, they can apply that to even some of their milder vehicles. And if the Cherokee is that way, then it'll be limited on clearance, but it might do okay.
Yeah, for sure. So if you guys want to check out the Cherokee Grand Cherokee, the drive impression embargo is up, I think, next week. So head on over to alttfl.com. Those reviews will be there.
I will say, though, and I think it's probably going to remain this way for a long time, would be my guess. Bronco Sport, if you're looking for a really small soft roader, as we call them, not off-roaders, but kind of a crossover with a few rugged features.
Yeah.
The Bronco Sport is the best off-road by far.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's not even close.
I mean, the biggest shame, especially this one that you drove, which is a Sasquatch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a full-blown Bronco, but for what it is, it's very impressive.
Yeah, really the biggest thing that is lacking is a low range. It's It still does pretty well, though. Not tons of articulation because it is a more street-oriented suspension, but it does okay with clearance.
I think it's like over 9 inches, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's got the center lock and a rear locker.
Oh, that's right.
So it's got pretty good traction, and it does a good job. This is a punchy little vehicle. You can genuinely go have some fun on some fairly mild trails with a Bronco Sport.
This is crazy. I'm thinking about buying one.
Oh, for your wife?
For my wife, yeah. Because her Fiat's going to be out of miles and she needs a car. And she actually does like the Bronco Sport a lot. And I like the Bronco Sport a lot. And she would rather probably have a CR-V, but I don't really want to drive a CR-V. Mm-hmm. Plus, like a Bronco Sport, it's just like a little bit more interesting than the RAV4 and even more interesting than the Cherokee. I hate to say it. And especially if you get, we probably wouldn't get a Sasquatch one because they're expensive. But if you do, it's a very capable little machine.
Yeah. And even some of the more basic, my fiance has a Badlands.
Yeah.
And that has, so hers is earlier. It's before they were doing the Sasquatch package. So hers is not a lifted suspension, but we have some Wild Peak, so a slightly more aggressive tire on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the rear locker and the center locker. So it's got pretty good traction. We've taken it on some mild trails and it's fun.
The biggest shame, and I'm just so bummed that they didn't launch it with the rest of the car, is the new Cherokee. There's been rumors about it, but where is the Trailhawk?
Yeah, which is something they need to do. When we were in the presentation for it, there were a few questions about doing a Trailhawk model, and they were not so subtly hinting at it. So it seems very possible.
Okay.
That they're going to do it, which would be great.
I mean, I think that the coolest vehicle in this category that died a long time ago, but the old Cherokee, the weird-looking one, that Trailhawk was actually insane. It was even arguably better than the Bronco Sport because it had a low range.
Yeah.
And it was weird. It didn't have a central transfer case. It actually had two low ranges because you had to have one in the front and one in the rear.
For the configuration of that all-wheel drive system to get a low range into
it. The transverse mounts, you had two separate sets of low ranges, technically, and a mechanical locker. Like this Bronco Sport, it does have a rear locker. It's technically a dual clutch thing that works really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the Cherokee had a physical, actual locker.
Yeah.
So that thing was just insane. And it was really cool and super good off-road. And people that own them, especially the Trailhawk, seem to really love them. The 9-speed was kind of a disaster. So they weren't the best made vehicles, but they were actually, and they also look strange, but they were very, very good off-road.
Yeah.
So I really think they need to do that on the new one. And I worry that because it's a standard hybrid now, the new Cherokee, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And they're also standard all-wheel drive, which is a good thing.
That's good. But they need to do something cool like that again to compete with Ford. The other thing I don't love about the new Cherokee is their marketing. Have you seen this? They're doing this don't call it a comeback thing. They're throwing it way back to the XJs of the 90s. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. So they keep showing SJs and especially XJs in their marketing for the new Cherokee. I think it's in general maybe not a good sign in a manufacturer's confidence around a new vehicle if they're spending more time marketing the XJs from 30 years ago.
Yeah, so this is what I'm talking about. They had this full reveal in New York, and look, it's more XJ Cherokee than actually the new one.
Yeah, still waiting to see the new one.
They had LL Cool J, they're doing this big 90s thing, which I love the 90s, but if you're going to do a throwback to the XJ, you have to make it an actual XJ, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't work if it's just going to be this unibody hybrid thing. I think that they really need to make it a proper XJ replacement, and then they're trying to claim it is, but people just aren't buying it.
No, but especially if they can make... if they do make a Trailhawk version of this Cherokee, and they can maintain the majority of the fuel economy that they've got on this, which EPA is rated at 37 mpg combined, it's really good, really good number. So if they can mix, obviously a Trailhawk version that's maybe going to sit a little taller, has different bumpers, potentially different tires, you would assume it's not going to be as good on fuel economy. But if they could be a decent bit over 30 mpg. Combined and have some of those features, then that could be actually a pretty appealing vehicle for a lot of people.
So head on over to altfl.com, Case and Cole. Cole doesn't have as many driving impressions, but Case definitely has some on the new Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
Those will be over there. I want to do our next segment, which is called What's in the Garage?
What is it?
And this is a problem I was having.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hilarious problem. So I'm working on restoring my little 1947 CJ2A.
Is your distributor rusting?
It has rusted. The distributor was full of water, as you remember.
Yeah.
So naturally, I bought a new distributor. Now, here, see if you notice the problem. Go back to the first distributor. Do you notice something, the problem with the new
the
one?
The position of it?
The position of it, Case.
Yeah.
So when I went to install the distributor, I made sure to note where the rotor was pointing on the old one.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not watching, is fine. It's pointed to the top left. Cool?
Mm-hmm.
So I lined up the rotor on the new one, get it to be all seated, and I go to stick it in there. Bless you.
Excuse me.
And it would not line up top left. Like, I could not get it lined up top left, but it would seat perfectly bottom right. So it's exactly 180 degrees off.
That's not going
to
work.
Not so good. So I talked to my friend David Tracy at the Utopian, my flat fender Jeep expert. He's restored like 1,000 of them, and he's very, very talented. And I'm like, well, what do I do? And he said, well, look at the actual shaft and look at like the little prong that lines up with the little dowel. So if you go to the next one, you can actually see.
Mm-hmm.
This is a riveting picture here. But the actual prong is offset on the shaft on purpose. So it can physically only be installed one way. I might have another. Did I send you a third picture? Okay. Anyway, if you look at a top angle, you'll see that that's offset one way. So it will only be installed 180 degrees off. And it's not like a little off. It's exactly 180. So I'm like, well, shoot, I need to go get a new distributor. It's going to be a whole thing. But then David had a brilliant idea. He said, well, if it's 180 degrees off, just swap the spark plugs around the wires. So he said, one will be 3 and 2 will be 4. So now I'm back in business, all because of some math.
Wow.
So if that'll work, let me know in the comment section below. But yeah. I think it will.
This is not a particular problem I've ever faced.
but it's weird that, so one thing I didn't learn is the distributor that's in it is totally the wrong distributor, the old one.
Yeah.
I think it's off of it's a military Jeep and it's too small. And anyway, so the new one is technically the correct distributor. It's just exactly 180 degrees off. So that's in theory, if I swap 1 and 3 and 2 and 4, it might work.
Oh, we'll give it a try. I doubt you'd have a hard time breaking it.
Yeah, you're not going to break that thing. But
it's what, 4.5 to 1 compression or something
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got the compression of a wet fart. and then we need to talk about something else that happened this week. The biggest thing, Case was involved in this a little bit. So we went off-roading in our Land Cruiser, our new to us 100 series. And what happened, Case?
Well, it didn't like it. That's for sure. Blew up the front diff almost immediately.
Yes.
We were trying to do...
Within like 80 feet, I broke it.
We were trying to do the Razor Rocks. First time we had brought this 100 series on the trail. Roman's been really excited about this Land Cruiser because it is a fun purchase. We love older vehicles, and Land Cruisers obviously have this reputation. So apparently... these front diffs breaking on 100 series is a fairly common issue.
We brought it over to Charlie's Toyota Repair in Boulder. He's our Toyota guru, really, really talented mechanic. He pulled it apart. I was hoping we could get away with just like, oh, we blew a CV, right? Basically, what this image is of are the broken teeth.
Shrapnel.
Yeah, so...
yeah.
So the differential exploded.
And it's kind of hard to get parts for them because most Land Cruisers are... still on the road, so there's not a lot of them just sitting in junkyards getting perused for parts.
Now, this is a really interesting thing because, like, you know, Land Cruisers have a reputation of being indestructible. But after we published this video, some people in the know said that this is actually the weakness on 100 series Land Cruisers. So, Cole, go back to the video. I pinned an interesting comment. We met this really, really talented engineer named Tim Cooper.
Yeah.
He specializes in axles. Like, that's what he does.
And he's a well-known guy in a lot of different communities, and he knows what he's doing.
So he said something interesting. He said, these use the same little 8-inch high pinion ring and pinion set as the 80 series solid axle, but the 100 series IFS CV joints are much larger and stronger than the ones in the 80 series solid axle. It is surprisingly easy to break that 8-inch gear set in these heavy beasts, and I'm still dumbfounded that Toyota didn't use a 9.5-inch diff as a basis for this IFS, an otherwise super beefy truck.
Yeah, and it is interesting because this is a heavy vehicle. It weighs about 5,400 pounds, which especially for 20 years ago is is not small. I like the second comment on this video. At least the side steps didn't get damaged.
Kay said some, if you haven't seen this video, it's over at TFL Offroad. Kay said some truly unhinged remarks about the situation as it was happening.
Did they make it into the video?
Yes.
I haven't watched it.
Pretty
oh, boy.
Much all of them. And people are, if you scroll down in the
are
comments.
Are people upset at me?
No, people love them.
Oh, okay, good.
They thought it was really, really funny. Especially, see, I approve of Case's gloating. 59 people like that.
Full transparency, I was not planning for my gloating to be a part of this video. So we, Tommy and I both own Land Rovers. When we make videos about our Land Rovers we own, and we're very transparent about, like, look, these are not...
They're crap.
These are not great vehicles. We enjoy them. And we just get absolutely berated by comments in every video we make about every Land Rover. So, you know, look, every vehicle breaks. I'm not saying that Land Cruisers break nearly as often as Land Rovers. But, you know, when the playing field gets leveled out a little bit, I'm like, hey, I feel a little vindicated, to be honest.
Case is like, well, listen, basically what we're saying is Case is desperately wants that old differential to hang on his mantle above his fireplace.
Yeah, I am going to keep that
as a reminder
when we get
to
it back
all
from
of his Toyota friends. But no, it is interesting. And like I kept reviewing the footage because I thought maybe like I screwed something up badly because, yeah, I'm a pretty shit driver. But I think what happened there, because I've watched the video about 1,000 times when we were editing it, as I was going up the Razor Rocks, two tires unloaded, okay? Mm-hmm. So the A-track system...
You're fully articulated.
Yep, starts going. But then when we fully lose traction on the right rear, the A-track system, I think, kind of panics because you can see I never let off on the throttle.
Yeah, so were you two-footing?
For parts of it, I was. But as it starts to slide back, you can see the right reels continues to accelerate.
Yeah.
So I think what happened was A-track kind of gave up. Like, it was grabbing the brakes, doing what it was supposed to. Then I got really off kilter.
Yeah.
And it was like, ugh. So it released all brake pressure. Then it became a fully open diff. The car slid back. If my reaction time was better, if I knew what was happening in the moment, I should have let off immediately. Because what happened was, I was still in the throttle as it started to slide back. Mm-hmm. Then it gripped in the front on the bottom of the hill.
And snapped it.
Snapped it. So it definitely partially my fault. Partially the computer just, like, freaking out a little. But yeah. This is an example of like where having probably the mechanical locker would have been
sure.
a big advantage.
Would make a big difference. But at the same time, how many vehicles from every brand that makes any kind of 4x4 have you driven up the Razor Rocks?
Many.
And how many front diffs have you exploded?
Zero, Case.
Well, now one.
Well, two.
What's Tacoma? A second? Well, that was not even on the Razor Rocks, and that
was,
wasn't you.
It was before the Razor Rocks, technically. So we're really good at blowing up Toyota front diffs. So if you've got a front diff that you're mad at, lend it to me. I'll blow it up. Pretty good at it now. Luckily, so to Case's point, this is really interesting. We actually had two Toyota shops go on the hunt for diffs.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them could really find one.
They're hard to find.
Apparently, they're really hard to find. But thankfully, we had a viewer that just has one who's sending it to us, which is wild. Yep. So, huge thank you. I think his name is Nathan, right?
Yeah. And ultimately, I think if you wanted to fix this issue, more or less, you're still going to be working with that same basic design of front diff. But if this vehicle, we're not going to spend this amount of money, because the whole point of this is to be
budget.
A more of a budget thing.
Yeah.
If there is such a thing in the Land Cruiser world.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to fix this issue... Air lockers would make the biggest difference because then you would have so much more control. Ultimately, with open diffs and even with a really good traction control system like A-Track, there's always going to be some amount of bucking and back and forth, and that is hard on the driveline. So you can try to mitigate that, but there's always going to be some of it unless you do air lockers, in which case you've got all of that control and you can just slowly and methodically crawl up a feature.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or the other solution to this is you buy Discovery 2 with a 9.6-inch front diff.
Don't even go there, Tommy. We're going to get taken off the air if you start suggesting things like that. People are not going to like it.
Listen, I think...
Don't buy a Disco 2. The Land Cruiser is a better vehicle. I have a Disco 2 because, I don't know, because I like pain.
Yeah, because he likes pain. That's exactly right. Yeah. So, look, ultimately, I think what we're proving time and time again is that... maybe we're the dumb ones here, but like ultimately these things are not great rock crawlers, right? not that they're intended to be, but people do use them as such, which is for why they put massive tires on them. But yeah, it's an interesting, we'll get it fixed, we'll get it back on the road. I thought maybe like it was a sign of wear because there was like that little bit of a clunk. Charlie was saying like he's got a ton of Land Cruisers and they all kind of do it a little bit. But he said it's probably not a wear thing. It was just when it hit the traction, it just, it exploded.
Yeah, and I think to your point, vehicles like this 100 series especially make for really good overlanders because they are very comfortable. They're generally very durable. There's not tons of frequent maintenance items or failure points on them in general. So as an overlander, it's awesome if you're cruising the Serengeti and everything.
Oh, for sure.
But it is, it's a heavy vehicle.
Yeah.
5,400 pounds. The physics at play there are such that you can...
Chonky.
You can shred some metal.
Did you have anything in the garage this week?
There's a lot of things in my garage. I haven't messed with them.
But nothing's broken.
You know.
You had your truck fixed. That was big news.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the front main seal redone on my truck because I've done it once before. Didn't use an OEM seal. I just used what O'Reilly's had in stock because I needed to get it done to go to work the next day. And that seal was a piece of garbage.
Was it really?
And started leaking worse than the old seal immediately within like the first week. So I really didn't feel like pulling that crank pulley again.
Is it a big job?
Because I've done it once before. It's not the end of the world, but you know, the crank pulley's on there pretty good. And I was like,
could my Ryobi get the crank pulley off?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Could your Milwaukee get the crank pulley off?
Yeah, for sure. It has.
Okay. Well, now that's just slander over here. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
So you got the new crank pulley. And does it leak?
No, it doesn't. On the driver's side, my front axle seal leaks horribly. Sometimes I walk out to it and there's a solid puddle under it, which, you know, isn't great. So I need to get that done. And if I'm going to have them messing with the front axle and replacing seals, I might as well mess with the diff at the same time, get a little limited slip action in there. And if they're going to do a limited slip on the front, I should throw something in the rear. It only just makes sense. So yeah, so that's probably going to be on the horizon for it. I don't want to do lockers on my truck. I've got the Disco as a rock crawler. I think the limited slips on the truck would be better in the snow and would be plenty good enough for the amount of off-roading I'm going to do with that.
Right.
So I would rather do a limited slip front and rear on it.
Just to clarify, it's a second gen Cummins is the truck.
Yeah. Dana 60 in the front and Dana 80 in the rear. So I'm not likely to blow up those diffs.
You got a lot of diff oil in there. So it could just leak. Yeah. It leak forever.
And that's true. It can leak for a while.
7 gallon diff right there. No, I'm excited about it. The reason I bring this up is because Case brought it to one of our friends to get fixed, and I was listening to the phone call and the lady was like, well, like, look, I mean, it's also like we noticed a leak out of here and like out of this thing. And Case is like, yeah, you're good.
Just all I need fixed is the waterfall out of the front of the motor.
Mm-hmm.
If it's seeping a little oil from here and there, that's fine. It's a 6BT. That's what they do. 12 valves. Find me a dry 12 valve Cummins. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'd enjoy seeing one.
Yeah, Cummins has never even seen one either. So before we finish up, I do want to go back to the comments of the previous video because you guys left some great comments. And if what we're going to do going forward is if you guys want to interact with us, patreon.com/TFLcar, leave your comments there and or questions and we'll be sure to answer them on air. But for the first one, I thought we'd go to YouTube. One comment we said is, so we had this big discussion about independent suspension versus IFS last week.
Yeah.
One guy said, you guys left off the best benefit of independent suspension. You're not dragging critical driveline components under the truck below the frame on my H1. If an obstacle clears the front bumper, it will go completely under my whole chassis without hitting anything. I do agree. That is an interesting point.
Yeah.
H1 is probably a little bit more ground clearance than most of the independent stuff we drive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there is potentially a ground clearance advantage with a well-designed independent front suspension. But you're also most likely going to have a solid rear axle. So just because you're other than in a Hummer, even on the Bronco, you might clear it with the independent front.
Yeah.
You might still drag it with the solid axle in the rear.
Someone said, what you guys don't ever seem to consider is the electronic systems of these freaking things that Land Rover as case in point. Everything since 2010 has been so electronically controlled. Monitor, you need very expensive and capable scanner just to figure out basic problems and issues. It's way worth with newer vehicles. I do agree. Land Rover's in specific, like my LR3, which is very tech-laden. There's actually these little scanners you can buy. They're not that expensive. It's, I mean, they're more expensive than your O'Reilly scanner. They're a few hundred dollars, but it's called a gap. Tool. Yeah. Basically, this company figured out how to like get into the brain of the Land Rover. Mm-hmm. So you plug this little dongle in, it connects to your phone, and then you have full control over everything.
Yeah, you can do a essentially a software lift on the suspension so that even its lowest setting is whatever you want it to be, in an inch higher potentially if you're going to run a bigger tire. And you could go in and mess around with a lot of that stuff pretty easily, which is kind of cool.
Yes, exactly right. And it's terrifying, and I never touch it because I don't know what the heck I'm doing. But if you do know what you're doing, you can really read out some really interesting things. Scott says, totally hooked on this concept. The wife and I are new to the off-roading world, following for years. Thank you, Scott. On your years of recommendation and the reality of what we'll do, we bought a new US-21 Land Rover Discovery, took it to a local off-road park yesterday, and we're hooked. Keep the content coming. By the way, Discovery 5s. No offense, Scott. I think they're kind of ugly, but they are incredible values right now. Like our...
they're very cheap.
Our friend Alan just traded one in for under 20 grand with the HD pack and big tires, and they're really good off-road. So that's a really cool thing. Kara says, love this idea. I would like to hear more about aftermarket add-ons such as rock sliders and winches, for example, brands that you found to be good quality versus junk. Tommy, didn't you buy some aftermarket parts that rusted almost immediately? Mm-hmm. Yes, they continue to do so. Also discussions on the advantages and disadvantages of different trims and packages. I like the extreme package on the Willys. I know Tommy has done Wrangler buying in the past, and I found these useful in buying. Yeah, we could definitely do that.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have a good... It's hard to have good coverage of exactly how good some aftermarket components are versus others because we get to test a lot of different vehicles off-road. Most of those vehicles are in stock form. They're being sent to us by the manufacturers. But it's not typical that we've maybe had 5 different bumpers from every brand.
Yeah, what I think would be really cool, I was thinking about how we do this. It'd be a little tricky, but I'd love to find like... I'd love to get like a Harbor Freight winch and a Warren winch, mm-hmm. and then maybe work with
torture test them somehow.
Yeah, like a recovery guy, Eric, and figure out how to really torture test them. I think that would be super interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, be really, really cool. A good format. I like it. Good evaluation. So you guys seem to kind of like our silly little off-road thing. So we'll be sure to keep doing it a little bit. And if there's topics you guys want us to discuss, leave them in the comments below because we read all of them. And yeah, it's a fun thing.
Now, we also... Tommy's up for it. We started this podcast with you and Roman driving the Land Cruiser.
Oh, we did. Some minutes ago we did that.
Yeah, yeah. Toyota obviously makes a lot of SUVs, a lot of rugged SUVs in particular. And I would be interested to hear your ranking, you personally, because it's different for everybody, between 4Runner, Land Cruiser, GX, and LX. Obviously, there are other Toyota SUVs, but... If we're talking about off-roading, we can probably leave the Sequoia out of that list because it's going to be, you know, at the bottom.
Jeez. Such harsh words. Okay, so are we talking the current ones?
Yeah.
The brand new ones.
What's on sale right now?
Which we would buy for off-roading or just kind of in general, you think?
I guess maybe a combination, but how would you rank them if you were shopping around?
Okay, if I was shopping for them, I hate to say this, Tundra is at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm thinking SUVs especially.
Oh, we're thinking SUVs.
We could do trucks another time.
Okay, let's do SUVs. So, I kind of think my least favorite of them, it's kind of a hot take. I mean, Sequoia is certainly at the bottom for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put 4Runner at the bottom next.
I would put LX at the bottom.
LX at the bottom. Yeah. Really? You Mr. Triple Locked over here.
I know.
Why would you put that at the bottom?
You know why. That front bumper.
Yeah, the front bumper is terrible.
So the LX is the only Toyota product right now that you can buy triple locked here in the States.
Damn really. Straight.
And that is cool. It's cool that you can get it triple locked, but even an LX Overtrail, isn't that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The LX Overtrail can clear little more than a speed bump.
Yeah,
so it's not.
Oh, but it's so cool. I mean, I agree with you. You're right. Like the, it's such like a hard thing because it is the only, genuinely only, I think since the 80 series in the U.S. Toyota or Lexus product you could buy with a front locking diff.
Mm-hmm.
So like the platform is so good, and then they plaster so much plastic onto it.
The bumper hangs so low.
And the problem is they're like, oh, we'll just cut the bumper, but it's like $112,000.
Yeah. So are you really going to take a hacksaw onto that? Somebody would.
Someone will, and I'm sure they have. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, it'd be ooh.
But I was talking to my dad about this at the beginning of the podcast. You wait 5-6 years, the thing's only going to depreciate $7-$8. Then it's going to be $111,000, and then you chop it up.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting one.
Also, how much does an LX over trail weigh?
I like 90 tons.
Yeah.
I think.
Which ultimately...
95,000 pounds,
maybe? And especially for us on this podcast...
6,300 pounds.
Yeah. So... It's a heavy vehicle. We primarily do a lot of rock crawling because we're here in Colorado. We're in the mountains. We're very close to Moab, so we go out there a lot. Rock crawling is a majority of off-roading that we have. I think if you were shopping around again for an overlander, this could still be a really good vehicle. But 6,300 pounds, it's not that you can't rock crawl with a vehicle that weighs 6,300 pounds, but you're going to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, so, that's good reasoning. So I would still put Forerunner at the bottom because I just don't like the seating position and I feel like the windows are too small.
Have you spent... How much time have you spent in a TRD Pro or a Trail Hunter?
Not much because we did that off-road thing and they are very good off-road. Mm-hmm. But I also think the back seat's terrible for what it is. And 72 grand for a Trail Hunter or Pro is insane for
a
Forerunner.
It's a lot of money.
So I just don't see the value there considering how small the cabin is.
But then again, we were just talking about some... 72 grand, including destination for the Willys 392.
Well, yeah, if it had a 6.4 liter V8, I think Forerunner would be higher up on the list. I'm not going to lie. I think that would be awesome. So I would do Forerunner, then I would do LX. What's your second bottom one?
Second bottom for me is probably going to be Forerunner, unless, so where I'm at, I generally like the Land Cruiser more than the Forerunner, if we're talking just regular kind of standard trims of those vehicles. I like the design better. I like the full-time four-wheel drive on the Land Cruiser better.
Yes.
So there's a few things that for a Land Cruiser, design both inside and out, I think it's more interesting than something like the Forerunner we had.
Yes.
Especially, so TRD off-road, which is good. It had some good hardware, but... It was white exterior, black interior. It felt like a fleet vehicle. Felt like a rental.
It was a Frigidaire.
Forerunner. It was not super interesting. I think TRD off-road Forerunner versus Land Cruiser. Ooh. I put the Land Cruiser ahead.
Me too.
But I might actually put a TRD Pro Forerunner over the Land Cruiser.
All right. So for the standard cars, we both agree Land Cruiser is better.
Mm-hmm.
So top of your list, Land Cruiser or GX? What are you taking?
I think I would go GX. Yeah, I like the V6.
Interesting.
And
you like the engines that blow up?
Well, they're not blowing up in the GXs.
Are they not? Will they not?
I don't think they
have.
Are.
They not?
I mean, look.
No, I do know. Okay.
I drive a Land Rover, so an engine that blows up not really a problem for me.
So for me, I think that I'd pick Land Cruiser over GX. Because even though that hybrid system and the gasoline engine sounds like a blender full of marbles, it's just it's a terrible sounding engine. The fuel economy is a little better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the V6, I drive it 8 miles an hour everywhere, so I don't think that I would really use the power of the V6 all that much.
And the GX interior is a little fancier than you like, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. If I'm going to take something off-road and I'm going to get it really dusty and yucky, I don't think I want that nice of an interior.
So your Land Cruiser top and then GX and then Forerunner?
No. My top is Land Cruiser, then GX,
then LX.
LX and Forerunner. Right. And I also, KDSS is amazing, but I kind of love just having the button where you can just disconnect the front sway bar.
I agree.
That's kind of cool. Even though the GX does tow 9, but Andre's towed 9 with it, and it's a little short on wheelbase for a lot of weight.
Yeah. So, and then we're both, Sequoia's is
way
not even
the
on the list.
No, not interested in that.
Good SUV for towing.
Yes, but it's a kind of a pig off-road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe skip the Sequoia. So what's your list, top to bottom?
I'm probably going to, again, it kind of depends a little bit on the trim, but let's just say in general standard models, I'll go GX at the top, then Land Cruiser, then 4Runner, and then LX.
All right, fair enough. Well, guys, let us know what you want to hear in next week's podcast, because we try to skip a week, and head over to altfl.com. We got more of these coming for you soon.
Yeah! Whoa! I'm okay!
Hey, do you love adventure? Do you love outdoor sports? Would you like to learn more and hear from amazing adventure athletes from all over the world? If so, then check out the Adventure Sports Podcast. We've been the premier platform for sharing adventure for more than 10 years now. We help you get your adventure on. Look for the Adventure Sports Podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Get out there and have some fun.